Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series has covered HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAF, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok Threads, Twitter at A Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Manissimo Art. Thanks for joining us for this hottest Hot D Season 2 summary.
As a reminder, expect spoilers from the entirety of Hot D Seasons 1 and 2, but less obvious, the only spoilers from Fire and Blood will be those already covered in the show. We'll start by highlighting our favorite Maester Manny prediction, some of our favorite hot takes and moments from the series, and then dive into further discussion on favorite and maybe least favorite characters, probably focusing on new characters from this season, our favorite episodes, and then we'll conclude with our overall rating of the season.
Speaking of ratings, we have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
Last but not least, this is totally on me. I really wanted to do this like we did for season one, where we had a whole bunch of people, but I did not know until very last minute that I could get this recording done before Dragon Con. And that was a big goal of mine, to get it done before Dragon Con. So we are joined by just one guest for this hottest hot take summary, but we're excited to welcome back Seth, who was with us for one of our season one episodes and wasn't able to join us for an episode this season while it was airing live because he was in Scotland for a portion of that time, which lucky him. So yeah, Seth, introduce yourself, remind people where they can find you on social media if you'd like.
Hi, I'm Seth. I, like Tara, also read the books. I wouldn't say I read them obsessively, but I do read them. I think all my socials are locked down pretty tight, but you can always find a podcast that I'm on called How I Spent My Allowance. That is the one that I think we are still doing regularly. Arrow Chapter and Verse is still out there, or ACV as we're calling it now, but we manage one episode of that every couple of months or so. And of course, you can always find me on Sagas and Sass.
Yeah, that's my other main podcast. We've been on a pretty lengthy hiatus because so many of us had just crazy summer travel schedules that seemed to be all over the map. Like, we could never find a time to meet, but we'll be back sometime this fall. Like, I'm hoping September sometime, but it'll kind of depend on schedules again. So super excited though to have you back with us for another Hot D Takes episode. Just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment has a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Okay, so we're going to kick it off by, we're not going to go over all of Maester Manny's predictions from this season, but Maester Manny, what do you feel was your best prediction and which one do you wish had come true but didn't?
So I think my favorite one was Aemon, that he took Baby Gon's throne in his absence. He's being disobedient. He's not going to be the king that just sits on the chair. He wants to go out there and fight like a true conqueror. That I was definitely happy that one kind of took place, because most of Maester Manny's predictions are made, you know, under the moonlight when he's drunk as hell and not really thinking clearly. So none of them really came to fruition as much as I would have liked to.
Yeah, that was definitely the one that was most true to form. But yeah, you had a few that were like partially true or...
Yeah, so like I had the one where it's like the last episode was going to end with Rhaenyra and Aemon riding towards each other. That's what I call my Nostradamus prediction, because it is something that can be twisted into like, oh yeah, that was happening, right? No, it's not real, but it was kind of happening. So it must have been real.
That was the end of episode 7, I think, right? So yeah. Aemon rode toward Rhaenyra and she didn't ride toward him, but she frontin'. And she would have rode toward him if he'd continued, so.
Exactly. The one that I really kind of saw the writing on the wall, which I felt was probably my favorite one, was that with Allison, right? When Allison has no power anymore, she's just a nobody. I definitely saw her reaching out to like Team Black, giving them some kind of information, doing something to just try to put an end to this. So that happened and I was excited about that.
Any of the predictions you made that didn't come true that you like, what was the one you most wish had?
The one that I really wished had was Daemon doing like an attack run on King's Landing real quick. Just like a little guerrilla run, like just running through real quick, throwing some fire down and then taking off. You know, nothing to sit there and fight or like a big battle, but just like a typical like guerrilla war type tactic. That's what I was hoping for. It was just going to be a real quick punch him in the gut and then take off real quick so they can't get you. You know, that was one that I was really hoping. But he was lost in the mansion for a long time, so nothing like that happened.
Seth, did you have anything you thought was going to happen this season that just didn't and you wish it had?
Yes, there was a battle that I thought was going to happen by the end of the season and did not. And I was a little surprised about that because that, to my way of thinking, pushes a bunch of big, expensive fight stuff happening next season. I think that was basically the thing that I had thought was going to happen and was most surprised by.
I think everybody, even people who haven't read the books, you're like, man, you haven't read the books. You know there's battles coming up, right? It's a fucking war. we all know there's battles.
Well, that was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. We all thought something was going to happen this season and like something bigger than Rook's Rest, but didn't. So.
Sorry. I was just thinking about the scene where the simple presence of four dragons wards off Aemond, who's certainly, I think, weirdly smarter than Vhagar in this sense. My sense is that Vhagar, if she sounded like a human, would probably not sound like this. But in my head, she's like, oh, those whippersnaps. I could take them. I could take them all. Aemon's like, no, Grammy, we got to get back to the Red Keep. I was wondering if they were going to have a little bit more aerial combat there, but no. And probably with good reason at that point.
We're going to get into the hottest hot takes. And the way I'd like to do this, since it's only the three of us, let's first give our overall top hot take from the season. It can be specific or it can be a little bit more generalized, but preferably not like something, like, oh, I'm going to rate the entire season. So let's each give our top hot take for the season first. And I'm looking at our actual hot takes list. And I would say... this is hard. I've been going back and forth over this like all day about which one I wanted to choose. My overall top hot take is we could have missed the pain, but we'd have had to miss the dance. This was obviously the battle at Rook's Rest, which left me at a loss for words. I thought they did a really good job with the cinematography, CGI and whatnot in that dragon fight, but also RIP to the Red Queen and our princess of side eyes and sick burns, the queen who never was.
The acting she did with one expression when the camera focuses on it as Maelys was falling was stunning. Just that 1 3-second, whatever it was absolutely brilliant.
Plus, I mean, just the how they had the light go out of Maelys' eyes and the way that Maelys was looking at her. Oh, it was so heart-wrenching. Oh, it was so heart-wrenching.
Maelys was clearly like, no, I can't, oh God. No, again, nope. I'd be Planetos's worst dragon rider. I'd just be like, oh, the big scaly boy. Look at you, you cute boy. We'll go over here. And the dragon would just flame me in self-defense, I think.
You just want to keep the dragon safe.
I know. I just want to snuggle my dragon.
Manny, why don't you go next? What was your top overall hot take for the season?
I really liked when they were bringing the head of Maelys through like King's Landing and to see the reaction from the people.
Yeah.
That the people knew that it was like, hey, you know what? That's messed up.
The actual name of the hot take was in which we play the world's tiniest violin for coleslaw.
Yes, for coleslaw.
Because nothing was going right for him at the moment. And one of those things was being a dumbass and parading Maelys' head through the streets.
Yeah, that was like awesome. And I just feel like everyone's reaction, they knew that what they were doing was just like blasphemous pretty much. Because yeah, they see these dragons as like gods. And now the dragons are fighting amongst themselves. And the people are pretty much dragged into this family civil war. Is what it is, you know, and they hate it. One of my favorite things is the guy who's just sitting, you can hear the guy yelling in the background where he's like, Rhaenyra's gonna answer this, you know. I was like, wow, that's cool, man. She is gonna answer it. I can't wait. I think that was one of the, I think that was like mine from this season, that call of vengeance, I guess.
Yeah, and it's also the culmination of a lot of things, too. It's the aftermath of the battle. It's watching coleslaw fuck up, which is always fun. It's seeing the small folk being pissed that this creature that they think of as a god, its head, like you said, kind of blasphemously paraded through the streets of King's Landing. Yeah, it's
yep.
What about you, Seth? Your overall top hot take from season 2.
My overall top hot take from season 2, I think has to be, honestly, probably the sowing of the seeds business. I've definitely got a few. Runner-up, you didn't title this, but in my head, it's some men will literally go on Twin Peaks-esque dream quests night after night and talk to a witch rather than get therapy about Damon's experiences in Harrenhal. But yeah, the sowing of the seeds was almost shockingly ruthless for Rhaenyra as she has been portrayed on the show so far. They have made a lot of characters just sort of nicer and more likable and generally easier to be around than they were in the book. Rhaenyra is certainly one of them, but to have her just be like, nope, keep them in there. Keep them in there. I told them they all could die. And it's like, well, Rhaenyra, you knew damn well that everyone is going, well, it's not going to be me. I'm going to be a dragon rider. And then dozens of people get mown down in. And it was also shocking coming on her Queensguard's death, because she seemed pretty hard hit by that. But then again, these people are commoners, so who knows?
Well, I mean, they're commoners, but also she doesn't know them.
Yeah, she doesn't know them. And she is more desperate, I think, at this point, because she doesn't really have time to go through all the records and see who's got a Targaryen in their family tree and how far back and.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of something I read in a different series, though, which was somebody had found out that her dad wasn't who she thought he was. And at the end of the book, one of the other characters is like, do you really think this is the first time that's happened?
Mm-hmm.
In all of those generations, nobody else lied about who was, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. On top of it, making Rhaenyra look pretty bad, even though all those people chose to take part in it, the show's choice to have Rhaenyra's soldiers like block them in was extra. It's one thing to have her put them all in there just kind of with some or a lot of them awaiting a fiery death, but then to also fence them in, it was a lot. And the whole thing was very, we talked about this in our episode 7 coverage, but how just cultish the whole thing was. But they did try to make Rhaenyra not look as good quite a few times this season. So we just kept calling it Team Green propaganda.
Yep.
Although this was
propaganda train.
This was Rhaenyra's choice. So
well, I was gonna say, isn't Archmaester Gildane an ex post facto Team Green propagandist?
Yes.
Yes. He does not like, I think, perhaps the idea that a woman dared try to become queen, even though everybody swore to it. I don't know. I'm listening to a history podcast about the Plantagenets right now, and it's talking about Henry II, which if you sort of tried to do a matchup would actually be the generation after this would be happening in Westeros, but it's still the whole thing about the royal family getting upset with each other because they're not getting what they think is their due. And it's just like, you don't care if the whole realm burns as long as you get good. Great.
All right, the next hottest hot take is the funniest one. What do you think was the funniest hot take? And Manny, I'm going to let you go first this time. And then Seth, you can go second and I'll go last.
This is hard. Like, I can tell you at what point I laughed the most. And it was when Oscar was putting Damon in his place.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny to me. Like, I was sitting there laughing. I was like, you got to sit there and take it, bro.
Yeah, that was Oscar Tully is hot D's Lyanna Mormont. Discuss.
Yep, that one.
Because he really is. He's a smart-ass little kid, and he's good at what he does.
Yeah, he was good at what he does, and he put Damon in his place, like, perfectly. And just Damon having to sit there and just eat it. I was like, dude, good. Enjoy, buddy. I hope you're hungry.
Damon's never been a great political operator, but the fact that this kid who's, I mean, he doesn't even look like he could be 16 in the show, is like, yes, I am well aware of how the Riverlands works, and let me give you a quick lesson in how it works. You're not going to like it, but here it is.
It was great. Even just starting out before Oscar Tully fed Damon a big old plate of worms when they first come together in this episode, which was episode 7, actually. That was a really good episode. When they first come together, Damon says, truly glorious, well done to this kid about the fact that his grandfather just died. It started off well and it just kept continuing because the kid was like, I didn't do anything. And then taught Damon some hard lessons. It was funny. It was probably not supposed to be funny because Damon had to kill that guy, that Blackwood, but it was. So, all right, Seth, what about you? Your funniest hot take.
It's hard for me to separate the humor of the hot take from the humor of the character's appearances. Now entering the ring, the unconventional, the eccentric, the gender fluid, Admiral Lohar.
Yes, I love that you actually went with what I wrote for the hot take. I was very proud of that one.
The thing that sticks in my head is when, and I'll go with show gender, when he looks at Tyland Lannister and is like, we have to mix bloodlines. And Tyland's like, you mean you want me to have sex with my wives? Yes. And that was just, I just really enjoyed that moment.
It was just funny how he was like, wait, how many do you have? Like he's trying to like work his schedule out. Like, hold on a second. How many you got?
Yeah. But the whole mud wrestling thing, that whole, I enjoyed Admiral Lohar.
Yeah, I did too. I'm interested to see how the further portrayal of that character is going to shape out too, because their story isn't, it's a very small bit in the book, but I think that they've made this character big enough now that the idea is that she slash he, as they are called by the triarchy anyway, is going to be play a lot bigger part. And I'm excited for it. Even though people were complaining about the acting, and I was like, I'm not going to say this person is Oscar winning or anything or Emmy winning, but like, I thought that they played the character really well. So
it's a particular type of character. I wouldn't go quite so far as to say stereotype, but we have seen this type of character before in other media. So yeah, stock type maybe, but the portrayal's just dandy. I don't get what people are complaining about.
Everybody has to complain about something. I don't know. And I think some of it is definitely people just being hateful and not actually about the person's acting ability at all, but whatever.
People got a people.
Yeah, this is another one where I've looked through all of our hot takes so many times, and I am torn between, do I want to choose one that the hot take itself I felt was just written funny, or just the hot take as a whole was funny? I think I'm just going to go with overall hilariousness for like when it happened on screen, just being like, whoa, what the fuck? And also the hot take itself I thought was amusing. And that is from episode one. And that hot take is Allie Slaw.
Oh boy.
That's Allison X Sir Cole of House Slaw, for you guys who don't know all of our nicknames. But Allison and Kristen Cole, our ship name for them is Allie Slaw. And holy fuck, they actually went there with Allison having this relationship with him. And then also it comes back in the end when Allison admits that she's taken a lover or whatever. I think that's how it happens, but, or maybe Rhaenyra susses it out. I can't remember from when Allison visits Rhaenyra in the last episode. She doesn't say who it is or anything, but she's still talking about it like it's this sort of like good relationship. And it's like, girl, in episode two or whatever, you were literally like smacking him around and then hate fucking him. But okay, you do you, I guess. Looks like a toxic relationship to me. So,
you know, on his side, she's just a girl. So there's no love lost between either of these two people who are banging each other.
I do think that there are feelings between the two of them that aren't just lust. Do I think that they are healthy? Absolutely not. They're pair fucking hypocrites. Way back in episode one, I think it was, he said, was like, we can't do this again. And, you know, narrator, they would in fact do it again.
Yeah. There has to be a big chunk of him that is still motivated by getting back at Rhaenyra. Yeah. Okay. Well, now I'll bang a queen. She likes me. Maybe. I don't know. Whatever. Look, I got to go guard her.
Yeah.
And then goad one of my men into a suicide mission because I'm feeling a way about things.
Yeah. I fucked up. So.
Yeah.
Hence, you gotta
send
off Sir Arik to die.
I thought also it was kind of funny that they, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but they're like, okay, now we have to make Kristen Cole look competent. We're going to stick Popinjay Hightower next to him. And by comparison, he is now going to look like he knows what he's doing.
Oh, Gawain. Okay.
Yeah. Gawain. Yes. Gawain, who is just really looks mostly to be like a Playboy clothes horse kind of guy. And all of a sudden now, Christian Cole looks like he knows what he's doing, because that's who we have to compare him to immediately.
He kind of looks like he knows what he's doing, but he also fucked up big time with the Battle of Rook's Rest. Oopsies.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, Christian's like, oh, Aemond has a good grasp of battle strategy. I'm sure he'll be completely reasonable.
Yep. Narrator, Aemond Targaryen was not, in fact, reasonable at all.
Oh, I felt like this season was kind of like that, though, because it's like Coleslaw, I don't know, I kind of felt like he was a bumbling idiot to begin with, and it's like they had to do things to like redeem, like the pendulum swung so hard in one direction that these guys had to shove it back in the other direction and be like, okay, so that's why we have like Coleslaw, all of a sudden he's competent, right? Daemon, all of a sudden he's a two-dimensional villain. At first it was like, wow, there's dynamic. There's something kind of behind him, you know, when in the first season we had Aemond, who came off as kind of like a two-dimensional villain. And then in this one, wait a minute, he's way more dynamic. He's got more going on to him, especially when his brother like embarrassed his ass at the brothel or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I see what they're doing here. Yeah, that was just one of those things that I was like, okay, like I see what you guys are doing. You guys are like, you guys really shoved that pendulum in. I mean, I understand. They had 8 episodes. You know, they had to kind of like make this happen, I guess. Yeah. To me, that's kind of like the theme of the season. Because the way after, you know, season one ended, I mean, if you were Team Green, like we couldn't even be friends in real life. You know, I was like, there's no way. And that's why me and Tara were talking about the like propaganda training and all this stuff. Cause it's like, oh yeah, okay, I see the lies here. Team Green is all of a sudden, okay, now we got to make the blacks do like something real bad. You know, we got to throw that pendulum now.
Yeah, well, I mean, certain things were coming, but the show did its absolute level best to absolve Rhaenyra of any complicity in Blood and Cheese. They're like, yep. Nope, no, it was Daemon. It was just Daemon acting of his own accord. And he even gave them the right instructions. They just didn't know.
Well, Daemon's clear instructions, quote unquote.
Aemond.
You have to kill Aemond because he's part of the family. Get
a
it?
Son, a part son of the for family. A son.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In the book, it's like, I don't even think they get a name. I just think it's like Blood and Cheese show up looking for a son for a son, grab the easiest one they can find, and then are like, well, we did what we came here for. And it also, again, Gildane being a green propagandist, which is weird because the matter's been well settled by the time he's writing, but we all have our historical villains. It really looks like, for lack of a better way to put it, Rhaenyra orders the hit. And in the show, they are definitely like, nope, wasn't her.
Well, and the thing is, like, I don't, again, because the maester who wrote, quote unquote, Fire and Blood is a Team Green propagandist from start to finish. I think that, yes, he makes it look like it was Rhaenyra, but it's always like, well, you know, we can't prove it. So to me, it always felt like there's something off here, especially when Rhaenyra is like, no, I would not. I think in the book, she even says like, no, I would not have done that. I'm pretty sure. I believed her. And I do believe that no mother would order the murder of another young mother's young child. Like Aemond is a young man, I guess, who did a bad thing, whether or not it was on purpose. In the book, it sounds like it was more on purpose than it looks in the show. But I don't think the show did anything wrong or bad when they kind of absolved Rhaenyra of being part of that decision. And even in a way, like Daemon didn't give the specific order, right? But also when it happened, he was like his little smirk about it was like, yeah, oh, well, like, yeah, it happened. Whatever, well, don't care.
What are you going to do? I'm Daemon the Hardass. Look at me, how hardass I am. Yeah. I don't care who gets killed. But looking at the people he chose to go do this, I'm like, you've got one very nervous rat catcher and a gold cloak who is there to do some killing for some cash. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, maybe you could have thought about this and planned it out a little more and maybe done some recon and maybe figured out how you could catch Aemond by himself at a place where he's vulnerable to say, like, I don't know, a brothel. Instead of just being like, who are the two quickest people I can find?
Oh, man. Okay. The last hottest hot take I would like from everybody is just like a bonus one. So choose whatever you want. It can be funny. It can be very serious. It can be something bad that you felt happen in this season. I'm like super torn about this, but I think in the end, I have to go with Rhaenyra and Missarius in energy. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. And I went with that one because I was like, well, I was kind of worried Manny and I were going to end up choosing the same one. We probably should have talked about it beforehand, but I didn't have time today. But yeah, we talked about this at length when we discussed episode 6, but I had earlier in the season kind of said, like, I feel like there's something going on here. I like what they're doing. Are they going to do it right is the question. And I felt like they did. And I liked what I saw. I'm a little bit worried about what's going to happen in the future still because of Rhaenyra's choice to allow all those small folk who came to possibly ride a dragon be fenced in and burned to death. A little bit worried about how Missaria might be feeling about that, but I know she kind of acted like she was fine with it, I think, from what I remember, but I feel like that might not necessarily continue to be the truth if Rhaenyra continues to be kind of uncouth about how she just sends these people out willy-nilly to die for her. But yeah, the way they led up to it and the scene itself, I really enjoyed. And I would like to see more positive relationship status between Rhaenyra and Missaria. Fuck Daemon.
Yeah, fuck Daemon, dude.
And Alicent, for that matter. She had her chance. It was their
exactly.
It was their entire teenage years. I do have to say this, because whenever this comes up, I feel incumbent to mention on it. Like, my wife was not a huge fan of that turn that the show took, and is in general not a huge fan of that trope in media, because she feels that women-loving women relationships get upplayed, while women just having really good friends who are also women get downplayed. And I don't know, I'm not an expert. I could see what she means. It seems like just about every time when there's a choice to make, these two characters are in fact just really good friends who care about each other, that gets nixed in favor of these two characters have romantic and sexual feelings for each other. But then you could also make that argument about male-female relationships as well. You don't see that nearly as much with two dudes.
No, I totally see where she's coming from, and I agree that there aren't often enough portrayal of very positive, loving two women being just really fucking best friends in media. For me, I think the dynamic between Rhaenyra and Missarya, if it was Rhaenyra and Alicent and they had hooked up, I could see that argument more because they were actually two longtime loving friends. With Rhaenyra and Missarya, I felt like from the very beginning, there was a tension between them that very quickly turned sexual, at least in my opinion. If they had been friends for a lot longer, I maybe... Not that I'm saying I disagree, like everybody is welcome to their opinion. And I totally understand where she's coming from on wanting to see more of that. Just for me, for my part, I thought that this was handled way better than it usually is when there's two women who get together. There is a power dynamic there, but Rhaenyra has never, since she freed Missarya and Missarya saved her, I feel like that power dynamic has not gone away because it is there because Rhaenyra is queen, but Missarya is the one who saved her life. So she has immediately gone into trust mode with Missarya and is treating her pretty much as an equal, you know, not as a servant. Yeah. So yeah, and I thought the whole thing was handled really well. I'm sure your wife is not the only person out there who doesn't like that it wasn't just two women being close friends, but also keep in mind that in the book, their relationship is portrayed, you know, oh, well, it's rumored that Rhaenyra and Missarya are a thing, and it's like they get together and have dirty woman and woman relations and practice dark magic. So in the show, they made it a lot more beautiful.
A woman doing something a man thinks she's not supposed to do and getting accused of practicing dark magic?
Uh-huh.
That never happened historically since the witch trials.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't know. I really like the whole thing. I don't have the best feelings about where this relationship might go in the future if Rhaenyra continues down the path she's been on kind of recently, what with the sowing of the seeds and everything, but I don't want it to turn bad. So like, I got my fingers crossed, I guess.
I had a lot of feelings about that whole thing, right? Because, you know, you're right. Just because two people are like connected in some kind of way, it means they have to be sleeping with each other. It means that they have to be in a relationship. It means that, look, some of the people who I connect with most in life, I'm completely platonic with. And that's guys, it's girls, it doesn't matter. So I guess when they do stuff like that, it doesn't really come off as weird to me. It's just like, well, it's just two people. Now, what I will say about the way they built this up and they did that is that I forgot that they were both women in that scene. They could have been two men and I would have totally forgotten about it because it gave me the butterflies like I used to get when I was like a teenager and like you first kiss that girl and it's like the buildup to it. That's what I felt. And the concept of the power dynamic, I didn't even think about it, honestly, when it was going on. I was like, no, this is just two people. This is two souls just straight up connecting, man. You know, and I think that's what hit me so hard about that scene. But it is true that, you know, that, yeah, if it's two women and they're super connected, it's like, oh, no, no, no. Yeah, really with two people with anything, right? And especially in this day and age where there's kind of like this quota that has to get met. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but it's like, okay, if it's two people, they have to be in a relationship because we have to have that. And it's like, just do it naturally, man. Like, don't try to force it. And I feel like what they did here was so natural that it kind of transcended the concept of, okay, well, it's two women. That was not the first thing that came to my mind at all when I saw that scene, which generally when another type of media and I've seen it done, that's what you think of. You're like, oh, it's two girls. This is going to be a relationship. I didn't think that at all during this. To this, it just kind of transcended that. And I felt like this is how you do this kind of thing.
I read a couple of things about it. And one of the things that I did read was that this is something that had been planned, but I think the decision to do it during that scene was made by the actresses or something like mm-hmm. that they were the ones who like, no, right, here's the kickoff. And it honestly did really well. Who knows how many times they needed to take that moment, but it looked like discovery. Like that was not Rhaenyra's intention when she went to hug Missaria. And Missaria was just like, someone giving me emotional comfort? What's this all about? And then the hug went on and neither one of them wanted to break it. After a certain point, you know, when somebody has their face that close to yours, you either kiss them or hit them, like that kind of that kind of thing. It was obvious that they'd both sort of discovered this feeling.
Yeah.
Which I also thought was really well done.
I loved it. Seth, why don't you go next? What's your bonus hot take?
I think I like, oh no, Allison's bad decisions are coming back to haunt her.
Oh, Allison.
Yeah, but that was sort of her entire arc this season. Like, you could have put that in for almost any episode.
Yeah.
And it would have been correct.
That's why she went on her wet, hot, what did I call it?
Wet, hot Westerosi summer.
Yeah, that's why she went on her wet, hot Westerosi summer camping trip.
She made all
these bad decisions and was like actually having to deal with the fallout.
I need to go.
Cruel, cruel summer.
but it's just like the whole business. Like, I even like when she snuck into Dragonstone at the end and she was like, hey, remember earlier when you begged me to stop this? And I was like, no, we can't. I was just kidding. Maybe we could. Rhaenyra's like, no, not at this point.
Yeah, way too late.
Yeah.
Way too fucking late.
She's like, oh, the boys will respect me because I've actually done some governing. That was one of the most interesting parallels. I thought this season was both the Black Council and the Green Council were like, women, what do you know?
Women, what are you good for? Absolutely nothing. Oh my God, for anybody watching or listening to this, we are very clearly joking, okay? Let's be very clear here.
Yes.
You're right. That specific hot take was from episode 4, and it was, in that instance, it was regarding like, oh, she had to take moon tea.
And Larry's.
And then she got all sick. She's feeling all sick from it, and Larry's comes to visit, whose name is literally Larry's Littlefooter on this podcast because of his whole, you know, shtick with Allison. And she is barely just recovered from like having to take moon tea, being sick from it, dealing with Larry's being a creeper, and then goes to find out that Baby Gun had put all of Viserys' books in storage and he's in a pissy mood and she tells him off, and then he goes and fucking gets burnt to a crisp at the end of the episode. And then just from there, it's like steamroll of like all of Allison's, this is just the tip of the iceberg, okay? Yeah. Of Allison's bad decisions haunting her.
And I feel for her more here. It's one of the decisions that the show made that I absolutely agree with was aging her down to be Rhaenyra's contemporary, because as much as I like George's writing for the most part, I'm like, oh, really? Evil stepmother? That's where we're going with this? in the book? Okay, sure. But this, she's really just scrambling. Her dad's putting weird thoughts in her head about her kids being killed. Like, I just got to get something to get. And then over the course of season two, all she does is realize that she has just made bad decision after bad decision after bad decision for a very long time.
Well, and to their decision to age her down, it also turns her from evil stepmother to a pent-up teenager who had been raised in this very religious and judgy environment of what she was supposed to do and who she was supposed to be. And then she has this good friend and she ends up being slotted in to marry this old dude who also happens to be her best friend's father. That does feed into how she becomes sort of bitter, but not a bitter evil stepmother, a bitter, you know, same age as Rhaenyra, who had a past positive relationship with her. The dynamic of their relationship in the past and currently, it made it so much better.
Absolutely.
Deeper, so many more dimensions there than, like you said, just evil stepmother. This isn't just Cinderella's evil stepmother coming in the locker in a room and stuff. The dynamic of her being like a pent up teenager who had to marry this old dude and like watch her former best friend go gallivanting about doing whatever she wanted, and how that led to all of this. And then her seeing the consequences of her bad decisions and trying to eventually at the very end of the season rectify them. It's been a really good arc.
Yeah, absolutely.
Manny, what about you? What's your bonus hot take?
Chicken soup for the Targaryen soul by Alice Rivers. Anything with Alice Rivers, man. Because she just like called Daemon out on all of his bullshit. That is exactly the kind of person that everyone needs in their life. She's what makes everybody better because it calls you out on your bullshit. And you're just like, okay, yeah, that is me. Yes, I'm sorry. What should I do? Right? Because in the end, Daemon's asking her for advice. Like, okay, so where do I go from here? Like, what do I do? It's like, oh yeah, she broke you, boy. She broke you. I love it.
Also, as the season progressed, Chicken Soup for the Targaryen Soul by Alice Rivers. But you know how Chicken Soup is compiled by one person, and usually that person has like several essays or whatever in those books, but there's always other authors, and her guest authors were absolutely Sir Simon Strong and Oscar Tully.
Yep.
Oh man.
I need to think of what their guest essays would be called in a Chicken Soup book.
Sir Simon's has to be Holding Grace, right?
Or smile and nod.
Oscar's has to be something about teaching lessons, for sure. You're never too young to teach someone a lesson. I don't know.
You're never too old to learn.
Moving on from hot takes, favorite new character. I'm going to be honest, since I've already brought him up, as much as I love Alice and also Oscar Tully, I'm going to go with Sir Simon Strong, man. He was pretty great. I liked him. He was taking Daemon's shit, just kind of holding his own with Daemon.
Wrote
to Rhaenyra as soon as there was a moment where he thought that maybe there was trouble afoot when Sir Arnold or Sir Alfred, whatever the fuck his name was. It started with an A. Sir Alfred came and he caught Sir Alfred and Daemon having their little secret tete-a-tete in the gods with Arrenal. I really like Sir Simon Strong. Every time he was on screen, I was like, something's going to happen and I'm not going to dislike it, probably, at least not from his perspective.
Yeah.
You know what, shit, I'm gonna have to totally agree with you on that one. I was gonna say Alice, but no, you're absolutely right, because the guy is just the calm in the middle of the storm. He's like, I'm just gonna roll with it. That's like his thing. He's like, I'm just gonna roll with this shit and we'll just kind of see what happens, you know. We're just gonna keep Daemon here and just kind of keep it going, you know.
Well, and between the two of us, that makes Alice a very, very close / strong second runner up for sure.
A strong second
but
yeah, but definitely Sir Simon Strong. He's the kind of guy where everything is kind of like, wait a minute, things are happening, things, and he's just like, let's just eat the rotten meat for a little bit and let's just kind of chill out for a second and let's kind of see what happens, you know. Let's calm down, right? He's one of those guys where it's like, just enjoy your time now, you know. If things go bad, we'll just kind of deal with it then, but for right now, let's just kind of entertain this so that way we don't start any shit.
I thought he actually got a little bit more, sort of took on a more Jeeves from Jeeves and Wooster role as the season progressed. Where at the beginning he was more like, hey, glad you're here, please don't kill anyone, and at the end he was more like, no, I couldn't advise it, sir. Perhaps we should stop for a moment and not think like a bloodthirsty Targaryen lord. Like, I actually think I do have to go.
That's a good analogy because that's exactly what it. That's exactly what it felt like.
It did was feel good. Like that.
Like, and a very, very obscure like analogy, but yes, very good.
I actually think I might have to go with Alice, though.
Oh yeah, I mean, listen, it was a hard choice for me.
Just because she was like, "Well, I'm here to work herbs and to give out therapy to broken men who show up here on a dragon needing it," and I also don't take any shite. I'm sort of interested to see what her end game is.
For sure. And that's why she was such a close second for me, because Sir Simon Strong does not have an end game, right? He's just trying to survive, trying to keep his castle in like only, I don't know, like 100 pieces instead of 1,000. Let's not let it fall apart any more than it already has, guys. Yeah. Whereas Alice, I mean, has to have an end
game. Yeah, she's given off way too many Woods Witch vibes to not.
She's not a witch, though, according to the creators in their house that dragons built. The extra episodes they do, they keep saying like she does witchy things, but she's not a witch. And it's like literally in the end, she has Daemon stick his hand on a heart tree and he has like crazy visions. Pretty sure that's witchy.
Yeah. Also, I guess my question is, I understand, obviously, that we've seen it again. We're seeing it with other characters in this very series, that Targaryens can have prophecy dreams. Daemon has never had any until he shows up in Harrenhal and starts eating the food and sleeping in the weirwood bed. And it's like, she's got nothing to do with that, because she said a few things in a couple of their scenes after he's had something weird happened to him while he was unconscious that seemed to indicate that she knows more than she should about what.
And she gave him
through that
late night drink like real early on.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, okay, sure, she's not a witch, whatever you want,
whatever you say, guys, whatever you say. But I loved her. I thought she was really great. Again, cannot wait to see what happens with her in the future, hopefully figure out what her end game is eventually. I loved her. I also really, I got to give like a third place shout out to Adam of Hall. I just really liked him, even though he's a little bit pushy with his brother and his brother doesn't want to do the things. And he's like, but come on, do the things. I don't know. I liked him. And I also like the Sea Smoke liked him. So,
Yeah, I would like to give my runner up to Silverwing. Just because she was like,
human, Silverwing, miss human. You stay right here.
Be my friend. Too bad it's Ulf that's her friend now. Ugh.
Yeah, Ulf.
Like he's already such an ass. Like I have no good feelings.
Yeah, he went from lovable tall tale teller at the inn to, well, I've got a dragon now, so I'm as good as everyone. I'm like, oh.
So, favorite moment, something smaller, take it in quite a bit from our hot takes that are a little more broad. Our favorite moment, the small thing that happened that you really enjoyed.
I think I actually just alluded to it, but both the insistence that Sea Smoke and Silverwing had that they definitely wanted new humans and that they were going to keep the ones that they'd found.
Mm-hmm. I love a good dragon cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You love them. Yes. For me, and this is going to sound like a weird one, but I'll tell you why. It's when Aegon was fucking with Aemond in the fucking brothel. And the reason I liked it, because that was the making of a character. It's like you think he's one way and then this kind of thing happens. And you know that when there's life events that happen, right? Because we've all been made an ass out of by somebody. And those are kind of like life changing, I guess, dynamic moments in your life where you're just like, okay, see, now he changes. I can remember times in my life that crap like that would happen. Not exactly like that, but would happen like that. That made me like a colder person and made my decision making much different moving forward from there. So honestly, I think that was like my favorite because I felt like that scene was a little deeper than it led on to be, you know, but the way I saw it was like, okay, these are the seeds that are planted. Now Aemond is going to become the actual person who he is now because this happened. So that was the making of a character moment for me where I was like, yeah, that was probably like my favorite. Because also on top of it is that I didn't like the guy, but it kind of made me feel bad for him. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, fuck it. fucking, if I'd have known, like, you know, and he burned his brother, I'm like, fucking good. You saw what he did to you at that fucking brothel. I'd have burned him more, you know, like, burn him when he's down too, man. Like, you know, like if he had done that, I'd have ran up to Aegon afterwards and be kicking him and be like, yeah, that's what you get for doing that with your brother, man.
If I were to choose literally a single, like, 10 seconds from the show, it would be Aegon sitting at the table all pissy and knocking the... the pitcher off like a straight up cat. But that said, I mean, really, my favorite moment was Viserys, our king, coming back.
Because
even though we had seen young Rhaenyra in a previous episode, if there was any hint or talk of Paddy Considine returning as Viserys this season, I did not hear it. So when he came back, I was like, oh my god, yes! Not just that, like, moment of like, oh my god, I loved Paddy Considine as Viserys. I liked Viserys so much more than I ever expected to, and seeing him again was amazing, but also the sort of just going back to this podcast, a little bit meta, really. It was like, oh, now I get to message Manny. I had to think about it, like, okay, I think Manny's watching the episode tonight, and I don't remember exactly what I said to you, but I was like, have you watched it yet? And you said yes, maybe, and I was like, our king.
Yeah. I was so excited. That was just like the way it made me feel is like when you're playing out on the beach and you're jumping in, up and down in the water, and you realized you've gone a long way. You're like, oh, shit. And it's like that moment where you find your parents again and you're like, oh, there they are. You know, and it's like, and you just, I don't know, made me feel like how much time has passed since we got to be in the presence of our king. So getting to see him was just, I wanted to cry. I was like, yes,
gosh. Especially when we didn't know that we were
Because I had no idea at all. I stay far away from the internet when these things are running, and I'm like, I don't want to hear anything about it. I don't want to know anything, you know?
All right. Does anyone have a favorite costume?
Yes. Rhaeny's battle garb.
Our princess of sad eyes and sick burns did always look on point.
Always on point. Everyone. Even when she was covered in soot or something, she just was a queen in her own right, man.
What about you, Manny? You said you do too.
Oh yeah, man. Rhaenyra, when she's like in her queen's garbs or whatever with the cape, and it's like the red, and then it's got like the goldish like stuff, and she's got the crown on and everything with Emma Darcy. Dude, I'm sorry. That's just what art looks like.
I don't know that I had like one specific favorite. I did really love Rhaeny's battle garb. I loved all of Rhaenyra's outfits this season. I thought she looked amazing. Rhaenyra looked amazing, but just Rhaenyra, they did a really good job with Rhaenyra's outfits from start to finish. But this isn't, I guess, one singular favorite costume. It's more of a generic thing, but Missaria's dresses were very reminiscent to me of Varys's robes from Game of Thrones with like the big sleeves, and it just, the way they looked, the way they fit, they weren't as maybe patterned or whatever as his were, but it did, I felt like they were trying to give us that feeling of Varys with Missaria, which I liked, especially considering obviously not same history, but Varys having just a really nasty history, you know, and childhood and everything, and Missaria having the same, and she is essentially Rhaenyra's master of whispers, mistress of whispers, however you want to call it. If they weren't trying to evoke that, then okay. I would not believe that if they told me that, but that's what I felt. And I thought it was an interesting similarity. There are more than one similarity, but yeah, it evoked Varys for me. And I thought it was very interesting. Would I like wear that outfit? Yeah, also, because they look comfy as fuck. Okay, favorite episode of the season. This one's really hard for me. I loved episode 4 in a lot of ways, but I wouldn't call it my favorite episode. Possibly episode 7. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you have a more definitive favorite episode than I do? Because what you say might affect what I say, honestly, because I'm torn between like 3 of them.
I honestly think mine was the Red Dragon and the Gold, because not only was it tragic, but it was kind of setting something up.
Yeah.
And I felt like, to me, that was probably the episode that hit the most. And especially because after that, it kind of slowed down, you know, which is fine, but it just kind of like slowed down completely. So I felt like that was like, I don't know, that felt like the season finale, honestly.
I noticed the slowdown too. And when I got to the end of the season, I was like, oh, that's because they didn't want to get to this battle. Like they were trying to avoid it. And I think if they'd if they'd gone any faster, it would have been really difficult for them to be like, no, it's not happening now. So, but yeah, I think that was probably my favorite episode too.
So I liked the battle and everything, despite obviously the loss, RIP, of our princess, and I liked a lot of stuff that happened in episode 7, which is why I was torn. But like, honestly, really thinking about it, I think my favorite episode might have been episode 6, Small Folk, which might be like a shocking or weird choice. But A, we got the return of our king. That was also the main chicken soup for the Targ Soul episode. I also really loved the conversation between Allison and Gwaine about Darren and how Darren is actually like a really good kid. And he's the one who wasn't raised by her.
I was slightly annoyed this season just because they're like, oh yeah, Darren, we've talked about Darren before. Darren has been mentioned on Darren. He's been here. What do you mean? It's not like we're just saying his name for the first time. I don't know why you're looking at me, buddy. And like,
yeah, it was a bit weird. Cause he might've been mentioned in season 1, but if he was, I don't remember it. He was not mentioned at all. So they've just now decided they got to add him back in. Maybe, I don't know.
I think it's maybe one of those things where like, we're not sure how many seasons we're going to get, but now that we're getting season 2, we're almost certainly going to get a season 3. And if we want to introduce this character, we kind of have to do it now.
Well, introduce by hearsay alone, but I don't know. I still
it's
like
a classic whisper campaign.
Yes, I still like the conversation between Gwaine and Allison because it was just another like Allison realizing.
Yeah.
I feel like episode 6, you're probably on point with that. I feel like episode 6 was the most dynamic as to where if the whole season was a tree, this is where the branches would be branching out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like a lot happened and it was a little bit all over the place, but it wasn't all over the place in that it was like a mess necessarily. Because we also, let's be real, got to see a little bit of a takedown of Laris Littlefooter by Aemond when Laris is like, oh, don't you need a new hand to the king? Kristen Cole was your brother's hand to the king. You should probably choose your own hand to the king. And Aemond's like, yes, you're right. And he's like, oh, I your grace, I wouldn't have thought or whatever. I don't think he calls him your grace, but whatever.
No. Yeah.
And Aemond is like, no, not you, you asshole. Go find my grandfather.
Yeah.
Oh, so gotta love a little bit of a takedown to creepy old Laris Littlefooter. Also, this is the episode in which we got moop Team Black propaganda boats sailing into the harbor. And awesome. Also Rhaenyra and Missandei kissing. Yeah, this is my favorite episode. Yeah, Small Folk was my favorite episode. Was it necessarily like the best in terms of action or whatever? No, but I think it's the one where the most best things happen.
Yeah, it's where all the branches come out, you know. This is where all the story arcs are going to happen, you know. And you're right, it wasn't a mess at all. Thinking about it, I'm like, oh, this episode should have been a mess because of what they were doing, but it actually wasn't, and they did it really, really well. So you're right,
it was everything everywhere all at once, and like that movie, it was still really good.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. What is everyone's least favorite thing about this season?
I know I mentioned this twice before, but it's not getting to a particular battle that I was looking forward to.
Manny, I see your expressions. It's your turn. Go ahead.
It was a Heron Hall thing, man. It was a Heron Hall. It went on for way too long, dude. It went on for way too long. You know, they could have wrapped that up way easier. Or if they would have given me 2 more episodes, maybe 4 more episodes at the end of this season. Because at first I thought it was the same thing, that it was like the battle. But the more I kind of sat on it and dwelled on it, everything led up to our queen, whoever was, dying. And then it got into this Heron Hall thing. And it was just Daemon chasing ghosts, which honestly wasn't bad. It was done very well, but it just went on for so long that it really made me think. And then with the way that the season ended, it made me fear, oh, so there isn't a lot of material in this book. Now we're going to have to stretch Armstrong the shit out of this to kind of keep it going, because everyone loves House of the Dragon now and we can't just end it. So now we're going to have to stretch this. And I'm like, and it made me worry about the next season, because it's like, okay, so let's say they get into the battle, but then let's say the battle lasts 10 episodes. And then it's like, okay, like that's cool, like we're looking forward to the battle, but I mean, I literally just had a hard on in season 1 with the way Daemon took out the crab feeder, right? Because it was like a no fight, just real quick, this is what happened, let's keep moving. And I loved that. And now I'm like, wait a minute, is this going to be dragons killing each other for 10 episodes and then nothing else is going to happen? Like, that's what I'm worried about. So I'll just say that
there's actually a lot they've got left. There is so much.
Well, let's be fair. It's a lot of, it's like 50% battles and 50% subterfuge.
Yeah.
And you said this earlier, Seth, and I actually think we said this when we were talking about the season finale, that, and so many other people have already said it too, what kind of budget do they have? Yeah, how are they going to fit all of the actual battles? Because there is a point where it's all battles all the time. And then there's some subterfuge, quite a bit of subterfuge after that. And it's like, are they going to fuck with the timeline a bunch? I don't know. I'm not necessarily saying I am going to disagree with their decisions. Like, I'm not saying that ahead of time, right? I think, but right now I'm not feeling great about it because, like you said, Manny, they spent a lot of time on a lot of things this season. And actually, I guess that feeds into my least favorite thing. But
yeah. And I guess it kind of just like, because in season one, it seemed like every episode had weight to it. And I think that was my thing with this season, is that there was probably three or four episodes that I was like, aside from some key moments, you guys could have thrown the rest into one episode and made that a heavy episode, to where it's like, boom, very poignant. Now we're moving on to the next thing. And I felt like they did a great job with that in season one.
Or maybe two episodes, but still.
Yeah, but still. But there was like just episodes when things were just kind of going and it's like, okay. All right. You know, so that was my thing. I just felt like there were some aspects to this season that felt kind of empty. Yeah. So that's what drove me to the conclusion, like, well, maybe there isn't enough material, or maybe they don't know how to like put this in it. And in all honesty, if I didn't have to wait 2 years for the next season, I wouldn't complain at all. Honestly, yeah. If I had to wait a year, I'd be like, okay, well, let's see what happens and let's see how it goes. But dude, you know, in 2 years, man, I mean, I'm going to be in my 50s by the time this show is done. You know, like, I can't do that, man. I want an ending to this, you know?
Yeah, so, like I already mentioned, what we've been talking about kind of feeds into my least favorite thing, which was the montage.
Yeah.
The big old trailer for season 3 montage. It's like, was it a gorgeous montage? Absolutely. I loved every second of that. But that's the sort of thing that you, like, end a penultimate episode with, okay? A penultimate episode ends with a montage like that. Not a season finale, particularly not a season finale when, again, like you said, we have to wait 2 years for the next one. We get all the things that are happening. It's happening in that, like, people are gathering, people are gathering, people are mad, people are gathering. Oh, that, now we're done.
I know, look, I know that it is inevitable that I'm going to get ruined by something before this show ends. Like, I know it is, but I'm not going to make it easy for anybody. I'm going to literally fight. I'm going to die on
it. I guess we're not doing a Night of the Seven Kingdoms podcast series.
I'm not going to pass on that. I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to pass. Okay. I will do it. I don't know. Maybe that makes it a more interesting dynamic. But yes, if you're planning on that, then yes, I'm there. Don't worry about it.
I'm actually kind of worried about a Night of the Seven Kingdoms series, because there's only so much Dunkin' Egg material.
And there also ain't no dragons.
It's true. There are no dragons.
My worry about Night of the Seven Kingdoms is that they're going to try to split each novella into two seasons, in which case, like, I don't know if I could stand
each
it.
Each novella barely even covers one.
Yeah.
Like, if they were smart, they'd do a 12 episode, like, they'd do a maxi series and have 12 episodes that would cover all three novellas. Because if you can't do one of those novellas in four episodes, you've got problems.
I think I would give them six if the episodes are about an hour each. Maybe eight.
Yeah,
but that would be stretching it real far. And that's my concern, though, is that they're going to try to, or they're going to say, like, oh, four episode season, and then four episodes 2 years from now. I'm a little, I have my concerns.
So just real quick about, like, the Dunkin' and Egg thing, is that the reason I'm excited about it is, like, simple, right? Because it is something that doesn't have dragons. It doesn't have, like, the typical stuff. So it's like, when I was younger, I loved Star Wars, right? Lightsabers, Darth Vader, all this kind of stuff. I can't watch Star Wars anymore. I'm kind of done with it, right? So when there's a Star Wars show that I would have been watching or something, the second a lightsaber shows up, I just disconnect. I'm just like, I don't care. I don't even care. Like, okay, your guy's going to twirl this around, and it's going to be all choreographed, and I don't want to even hear about it anymore. You know, I'm just kind of finished with it. So I worry about that when it comes to things like House of the Dragons. Like, yeah, the dragons are really awesome, but at what point do they kind of oversaturate it with it that it becomes not magical anymore? Just like the lightsaber did for me in Star Wars, where it kind of just stopped becoming cool. And it was like, yeah, I don't care about it anymore. So the second I see it, I just kind of disconnected. I'm like, you know what? I don't care anymore. So I'm kind of excited to see something that's a little kind of off key that takes place in the same world, just to kind of see how that would turn out.
Okay. What's the hottest burning question this season left you with?
Is that going to be like on a story level or on a production level?
Whatever you want. Because like last season, it was for sure on a story level. But this season, yeah. I think there is some production level things to about.
Yeah. So like you remember in Battlestar Galactica, right? Where they wound up colonizing New Caprica, right? And then the Cylons show up. It's like an occupation kind of camp thing, you know, kind of stuff. And I thought that that was going to last the entire season, but it only lasted two episodes, right? It was like two or three episodes and then they were gone. So my burning question when it comes to just like on a story level is that, is this battle going to take place for eight episodes or is it going to be just kind of like a two episode thing real quick to where they make the first two episodes really awesome and then it gets more into exposition and stuff about what happens afterwards and stuff for the rest of the season, which would be awesome, you know? And then on a production level, I mean, how many episodes are we getting? Like, where is it going? I'm trying not to get like impatient with it, you know, because I am enjoying it. You know, when you have like a best friend, you love them so much and you just beat the crap out of them sometimes, like verbally, you know, like that's kind of what's happening between me and this show. Like first season is when we first became friends. And then the second season is where we're just best friends now. So I can just say whatever I want to. And then now I'm just kind of like beating you up as you go. It's not that I hate the show. It's not that I have any problems with it. And I know I'm nitpicking and I know I'm stretching. Okay. I know I am.
We all are.
Yeah. I'm just overdoing it a bit. But
no, I don't think you are.
But I'm just curious as to how the production is going to be. Are we going to get a bigger budget this time? I mean, is the budget going to get swallowed up in the first few? And maybe that's a good thing, right? That maybe that way they do the war in the first two or three episodes, get that out of the way. And well, then we get to see kind of the aftermath of it.
There are a lot of battles.
Yeah.
Like a lot. I would guess that they might end up doing shorter seasons. So they've got the budget to do those because.
Well, they're only doing four seasons total. So announce that. So there's all only right. two more seasons. So there's only so much they can stretch out the battles that they need to cover if they're going to cover them, which one would assume they would. But then again, they didn't cover the Battle of the Burning Mill. So that was just two boys fronting and then cut to bloody battlefield, bloody post battlefield.
sorry. I don't know why, but I pictured it in my head when you said that. And then I started to hear like a voiceover with a Civil War letter reading out of Civil War.
Oh my God. Dear cousin Benjicott, this is your cousin Davos Blackwood. We have just murdered a whole fuck ton of Brackens. Oh my God.
When Johnny Comes Marching Home starts to play under it.
Yeah. oh my God, you're not wrong though. That is kind of what it was like. It was like a Civil War documentary.
Yeah.
Okay, so your burning question.
My burning question, what's wrong with nettles? That's actually a little bit of a pun now that I think about it.
So Manny, having not read the books, doesn't know from nettles.
You don't know from nettles. Nettles at this point is not a spoiler because it looks like...
She's not going to exist.
She's not going to exist. But she in the book is a girl.
Let me say this just because I want to make sure we don't spoil Manny for anything. But you know how Reyna is chasing after that dragon that eats sheep?
Yep.
In the book, it's a girl named Nettles.
No, yeah, and that's actually, I had a long conversation a few nights ago with a friend of mine who has read the books, and I'd asked him not to spoil anything. Everything we're talking about right now is exactly what he was telling me about, so I'm familiar with the person now.
At this point, it's not a spoiler because as far as we can tell, she's not going to exist.
She's not going to be in the show.
Reyna has taken her place.
What was nice about Nettles, though, is that she not only didn't have any clear Targaryen ancestry, she didn't have any of the markers of Targaryen ancestry. Like, I think she was brown-haired, brown-eyed, if I recall correctly.
Well, and to be fair, Adam of Hull is in House of the Dragon, too, so...
Yeah.
I feel like they took the physical characteristics of Nettles and put them on Adam of Hull, and then they wanted to give Reyna a more interesting story, so...
Which is, I mean, fair.
It's fine, I guess.
Yeah.
I just wish we hadn't had to watch her run after a dragon for like two fucking episodes or whatever it was. And then all we get at the end is her like seeing the dragon for the first time. It's like, oh, Christ, could we at least have seen her get her dragon finally, if that's what's going to happen?
Apparently not till season three.
No, because all it was a trailer for season fucking three.
Yeah.
I think my hottest burning question is, who is Alice Rivers? What the fuck is going on with Alice Rivers? What is she planning on? What is she doing? What is her? And we already talked about this a little bit, quite a bit. I don't know if I would say quite a bit, but more than a little bit, maybe not quite a bit, somewhere in between those two. But yeah, that's my burning question. what the fuck with Alice Rivers? I'm not saying this in any negative sense. I want to know.
Yeah.
That's why it is my burning question.
Especially knowing what she does in the book. I'm like, okay. Well, guess I'll have to wait and find out.
That's why it's a burning question.
There you go. Yeah.
I have the same questions about production and whatnot, but let's rate the season as a whole on a scale of 1 to 10. Targ eyebrows. Seth, why don't you go first this time? What would you rate this season? And you half eyebrows are okay, because as we know, they don't fill in their eyebrows properly anyway.
They don't. There was a lot of stuff I liked about this season. There was some stuff that I was like, I think it is certainly better than average, but I don't know that I could say top tier. So I'm going to go with 7 out of 10.
I think that's fair. What about you, Manny?
For as much as I beat my friend down this year, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 because I liked where they were going with it. Looking in retrospect, I mean, I was heated at the time for our last episode, but going back in like retrospect, I did like that after like the Red Dragon and the Gold, that there was a cool down period and that it went on. Like, I wasn't crazy at the fact of how long it went on for, but it was nice that there was kind of like a change of pace, kind of more exposition going on, which was awesome, you know, and I did like how they kind of built up to it. And even the way it ended with the armies marching, I finally got to see my Starks, right? I knew they would show up at some point, and they did. At least Maester Manny did anyway. He knew they were coming. He just didn't know when, apparently. But I did like how it kind of built up to that. And the montage was actually pretty cool because you get to see good old Otto in a cage, and it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, and then you're seeing the armies march and all this stuff, and it's kind of this big buildup to where I'm like, man, that's really awesome. But again, the fact that I have to wait 2 years for it, one of the worst, I think, like cliffhangers I had experienced in my life was, again, going back to Battlestar Galactica, was when the Pegasus and the Battlestar Galactica, they send the fighters towards each other, you know what I'm saying? And it's, you know, the big drum music and everything is like, and then it just kind of ends. And then it's like, well, now you're going to have to wait a year. Sorry, fucker. You know, take a seat. But that was only a year. And that was really bad. That was really, really bad. So I'm hoping that we don't have to wait 2 years. But I did take a shit on this season a bit. But in all honesty, I did appreciate the fact that they did push the pendulum in the other direction. That they did kind of give you a secondary viewpoint on what's going on. And now you're getting to see things through like a realistic perspective with Allison and stuff like that and what's going on over there. You know, where it did kind of muddy the waters a bit. And I like that. It didn't make everything so clear cut as the way it ended in season one, where it was very black and white. So I did like that they muddied up the waters a bit. I like that it built up. I like that Aemon kind of came to power and he barbecue ribbed his brother.
We got the baby gone. We got the baby gone.
Baby gone. Barbecue sauce. and I thought that was good that they like did all that. So in retrospect, yes, I think that I'd give it an 8 out of 10. That was a very long-winded 8 out of 10, but it's an 8 out of 10.
I think that immediately after the season ended, I think I was like in a 6, maybe a 6.5 out of 10 at best. But in retrospect, and also talking about it again and going over all the like positive stuff, especially with you guys, I'm with Seth. I'm at a 7, maybe a 7.5. I'm not supposed to give quarter eyebrows, but I'm going to do what I want. It's a 7.25, I think. There was a lot of good stuff in this season. Am I happy with the way it ended? Absolutely not. And I'm going to joke about it for as long as I can, including probably several times next week at Dragon Con when I have like 3 House of the Dragon themed panels.
Just wait until the trailer for season 3 comes out. And it is just the montage from the end.
It's just the montage. Yeah.
And then Manny and I will do like, there were several trailers that came out. And I know a lot of podcasters were doing an episode for like every trailer, which no thanks. I don't have time for that. But Manny and I did one when they did the special like green versus black trailers, which was really cool. And also, I think that gave us a better idea than we even thought of or expected at the time of how they were going to go with this season. With, again, they made Team Black look real great in season 1, and they hyped up that Team Green propaganda in season 2. But yeah, 7.25 out of 10. A lot of great things about this season. I certainly did not hate it. I will probably watch some of the episodes again. I might skip over some parts or some episodes entirely, but I mean, I enjoyed it. what am I going to say? Listen, when we have season 5 of Game of Thrones and the ending of Game of Thrones to compare it to, it's like, listen, yeah, we're doing real good here, guys.
Yeah, we really can't argue with that.
We really are. Or like some of the absolute nonsense they introduced, even as early as season 2 of Game of Thrones, cough, cough, Jaime becoming an actual kinslayer and killing his cousin to get out of jail free or whatever. This was a good season. They did a lot of good things. I wish they'd made it more of a season in 2 and of itself versus a trailer for season 3 at the end.
I mean, look, let's be real here. You can hang out with your friends and you can have a not great night, but it's still great to be around your friend, isn't it? You know, like it doesn't matter, you know? So to me, that's the way I look at it. Hey, I got to hang out with my friend for the past 8 weeks. Was it as good as the first time we hung out 2 years ago? No, probably not. But you know what? It was just good being around them.
Yeah, it's like raiding a convention. One year you have a really great San Diego Comic-Con or Dragon Con, and another year you have a kind of meh Dragon Con or San Diego Comic-Con. Let me do an average here. What's 7 plus 7.25 plus 8 divided by 3? That's a 7.42 rating of this season. And again, I think a lot of that is in retrospect. If you had asked me this right after the season finale, I probably would have rated it lower. But in retrospect and discussing all the positives, it reminds me that, wow, there really were a lot of great things this season. Was it what I hoped for? Not necessarily. Was it bad? Also, no. As we close out the episode, just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you to Seth for joining us for this hottest of hot D-takes episode. And of course, to our listeners for also listening. Wow, that's a dumb sentence. I'm not even going to change it. I don't care. I'm so tired. This is our final, like, overall Hot D season 2 episode. But for season 1, we did do a Hot D gives and takes where we did sort of a eulogy to Viserys. And I'm pretty sure that we are also going to be doing a Hot D gives and takes eventually. And when I say eventually, I mean in a month or month and a half or so, because I won't have time for a while. But for our Princess of Side Eyes and Sick Burns, Rainies.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely keep an eye out for that. And for the most current news and updates about this series, make sure to follow at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, and or Threads, TikTok, Twitter. But also please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.